So good afternoon. My name is Mike Niehaus. I am a senior product marketing manager now on the Windows team back in Redmond. I used to be a person who did real work doing OS deployment tools and just generally everything around Windows deployment. So that's really the topic for today, is talking about what's new in Windows 8.1 deployment, focusing on what's changed in the last year. And it has been a relatively busy year, starting just before TechEd here last year, where we released Windows 8.1. Hard to believe that's been over a year ago now. That was generally available in October 2013, along with some new releases of Config Manager 2012 R2 and MDT 2013 to support deploying Windows 8.1. But then there was also an update to Config Manager 2012 SP1, a new cumulative update that enabled that with Config Manager 2012 as well. In April 2014, then, we had the Windows 8.1 update that was released, along with an updated ADK that went along with that. So we'll go through all of these as we're going through it, but that kind of gives you an idea of the timeline of where we're at. So things have been fairly quiet since April. You probably read rumors about the August update, and they just kind of fizzled out. And yes, we released an August update, but there was nothing special about it. You'll probably see rumors of other things that are going to be coming up, so you'll see those coming. We're not to the point yet where we're talking about those. We will be in the next couple of months, but for right now, we're still focused on Windows 8.1. So for Windows 8.1, when we're talking about deployment, there are a few different areas that we can talk about. The OS deployment process itself, the process of deploying modern apps to a Windows 8.1 system, and then really just the infrastructure pieces that are needed for that. So we'll try to hit on all of those as we go through, focusing mostly on the OS deployment side, where we really have a few different scenarios that we need to concern ourselves with. If you've got systems running Windows 7, which is probably most of you today, the path to get to Windows 8.1 is to do a traditional OS deployment. It's probably the exact same process you went through to move from Windows XP to Windows 7. It's going to be migrating the user data, capturing all the data and settings, laying down a new operating system image, injecting new drivers, reinstalling the applications, and restoring the user data on top of that. That's the process that's been around for quite a few years now, using MDT, using Config Manager, using WDS to do those. If you happen to be one of the few customers that actually deployed Windows 8, the process of going from 8 to 8.1, we would actually recommend doing that with an in-place upgrade, which is a lot easier because you basically let the setup program do all the work. The process of doing that is just running setup.exe/auto:upgrade and let it run for an hour. Depending on the speed of the machine, it can take anywhere from 15 minutes to an hour to an hour and a half on machines with slower spinning hard drives. So the process itself, though, is very similar to the traditional deployment, except that you don't need to worry about anything that's going on behind the scenes. It will capture all the data, drivers, and settings automatically, but more importantly, it also captures the apps. So you don't need to worry about reinstalling any applications as part of this upgrade process. It does use a standard image. You had to use the original Windows image off the Windows Media. You can't use your own custom image with this, and you would need to use some type of software distribution tool if you wanted to do any of these in bulk. We've been talking about this type of process for a long time. We talked about it for customers looking to move from Windows Vista to Windows 7, from Windows 7 to Windows 8, from Windows 8 to Windows 8.1. And for those that are just making that one operating system version jump, it's a pretty good option. We put a lot of optimizations into this to make it much faster than it used to be, to make it much more reliable than it used to be, so that if there happens to be a problem that occurs during the upgrade, it can roll back to the old operating system and let you investigate what caused the problem, fix the issue, and then try again. So much different than the upgrade processes of old. For those of you going back many years that ever tried to do a large-scale upgrade from, say, Windows 2000 to Windows XP, you probably swore that you would never try to do something like that again. We've improved it quite a bit since then. This isn't the old file-by-file type of upgrade process. This is an image-based upgrade. So the upgrade process will remove all of the old operating system, pretty much leaving everything else behind. It knows what belongs to the OS. It knows what doesn't. So delete all the stuff that belongs to the current OS. Lay down a brand new image. Re-import some of the registry stuff for the apps and the data and the settings that get migrated, and then boot up the new operating system. So much more reliable than it used to be. The third process that we have to concern ourselves with is kind of a traditional servicing operation, or applying an update to the operating system. That's what we use to go from Windows 8.1 to Windows 8.1 update. That is really simple. The biggest problem to worry about with that one is just the size of the update. It's about anywhere from 500 to 800 meg update, depending on the architecture. But it's something that you can just approve with WSUS or deploy using the Config Manager patching capabilities. Push it out to all the machines, they install the update, reboot once, apply the new components to the OS, and off you go. You're going to see a whole lot more of these as we move forward into the next Windows, because all of these operations are going to be in play. So it's not like we're just talking about Windows 8 to Windows 8.1 in-place upgrade because we think there's a lot of you running Windows 8 and want to get to Windows 8.1. We want you to understand the process because we really want to broaden that out as we move forward into the future. For now, though, for Windows 8 to Windows 8.1, that's the recommended approach. If you're going from Windows 7 to Windows 8.1, you'll use a traditional OS deployment process. And if you've got any existing 8.1 machines, installing the update is fairly straightforward. So in those traditional scenarios, we're talking about using the assessment and deployment kit. Windows deployment services, if you wanted to do Pixie booting or multicast content distribution. The Microsoft deployment toolkit for light touch deployments or integrated with Config Manager. And Config Manager OSD for those super high scale deployments where you really want to be able to push out hundreds of deployments a night. The ADK for Windows 8.1 was updated to include a new version of Windows PE. Really didn't change too drastically. It now has some logic in it that will automatically determine the amount of scratch space to use. So if the machine has less than a gig of RAM, it will use a 32 meg scratch size. If it has more than a gig of RAM, it'll use 512 meg. That would be great, except when you do this with MDT or with Config Manager, they explicitly set the scratch size. If they would let it default to unspecified, then Windows PE would pick it for you. But since the tools that you're using set this size, well, then this automatic option really doesn't work. But that's okay. In the future, we'll be able to support that and make this a little easier. But for those of you who are using the MDT and Config Manager boot images, you would probably want to set this to something higher than 32 meg, because 32 meg generally isn't big enough when you're doing injection of language packs and drivers. It's better to have probably something around 128 meg at least. We've increased the amount of RAM that's supported with Windows PE, which really didn't matter for most people. You don't really need RAM when you're deploying an operating system. The main use for this is people wanted to be able to run memory testing utilities from Windows PE. And in order to do that, we needed to expose all the RAM to Windows PE. So now with an x64 OS, you can see up to 4 terabytes of RAM. For x86 systems, you can see up to 64 gig of RAM. And you can run these memory test utilities against that. There was also the ability in Windows PE 4 to profile the boot process of Windows PE to identify what files were actually being loaded, and if a file wasn't being loaded, you could remove it from the Windows PE boot image. So as a result, you could shrink the Windows PE boot image down to a much smaller size. There were two problems with that. One is that boot image was then only useful on that one particular piece of hardware to perform that one specific task, Because if you used it on any other hardware or to do anything that varied even slightly from what the profiling attempt was, then you wouldn't have the necessary DLLs and other files necessary to run. The second problem was, because of the first problem, no one ever used it. So we had this capability in Windows PE that no one used, so we removed it from Windows PE 5.0. It's okay, most people aren't going to miss it because it was really hard to use unless you were an OEM manufacturing hundreds of thousands of identical machines with exactly the same hardware and performing exactly the same steps on every single one of them. We do now have something that we're kind of calling Windows PE 5.1, but it really doesn't exist. It's not like you can go out and download Windows PE 5.1. Instead, you have to take a Windows PE 5.0 boot image and take the six updates that comprise Windows 8.1 update and inject all six of them into your Windows PE 5.0 boot image. So you inject all of those, then you have to export the boot image, otherwise it gets really bloated. So you export it into a new WIM so it's nice and small again, and then you can use that as a Windows PE 5.1 boot image. That's not a simple process to go through. I have documented how to do that with MDT, and it's not that bad. It's basically mounting the WIM, injecting the six updates, doing a DISM command to clean up the boot image, exporting it to a new WIM, and then you are set to go. Doing that with Config Manager is more difficult because it doesn't provide an automated way to do that, but at least you could use MDT to generate a generic boot image for you and then import that into Config Manager and use it there. Now, technically, that's not supported. They don't support using Windows PE 5.1 with Config Manager, primarily because Config Manager can't service that boot image itself. But as long as you're not adding anything extra to it, like trying to use Config Manager to add a new component to the boot image, everything will work out okay. The main reason for Windows PE 5.1 is to support a new process called WIMBoot, which is really running an operating system from a WIM file, but not in the same way that you would run a Windows PE image from a WIM file. This is instead just taking the WIM, putting it on the disk, and then creating pointers into that WIM file. So we'll talk a little bit more about that on the next slide. But that's the big reason to go to Windows PE 5.1. If you're not doing WIMBoot deployments, don't worry about Windows PE 5.1. Stick with 5.0, since it's much easier to build and much easier to actually use. There is an updated version of USMT, USMT 6.3. Don't ask me how they came up with that number. Basically, it corresponds to the operating system version number, which is really Windows 8.1. Behind the scenes, it reports itself as Windows 6.3. So as a result, USMT 6.3 is the version that adds support to Windows 8.1. That was updated with the Windows 8.1 update. So if you installed the ADK for Windows 8.1 before April, you'll probably want to install it again. That doesn't mean uninstall it and reinstall it. Just download the ADK setup program again and run it, and it will show you that there are updated components available to install, including an updated version of Windows of USMT. The big change there is it adds support for migrating the settings in the Windows 8.1 update. The only one you're really concerned about, though, is the Enterprise Mode IE. We'll talk a little bit more about that later, but if you used USMT with the pre-Windows 8.1 update version, it wouldn't know to migrate the Enterprise Mode IE settings to the new OS. There are also changes then to the DISM tool, which is just a kind of a catch-all utility. I always forget what that acronym stands for, but each of those letters does have some meaning. But basically, it's a deployment tool to service and to perform a variety of operations against Windows. It's been enhanced primarily to add support for WIMBoot. So it has the ability to do most of the heavy lifting to apply a WIM file used in WIMBoot to a system so that the machine will actually boot up. There are, though, a couple of other options that you should look at. One is the cleaning up of base components when they've been superseded. So let's say you take a Windows 8.1 image and you apply all the currently available updates to it. Each of those updates installs a new version of an OS component, but it doesn't remove the old versions. There was a command in Windows 8 called Start Component Cleanup, which would remove some of the old versions, but it wouldn't remove all of the old versions. It wouldn't remove the original base version that was in the original OS WIM. So let's say the original version was version 1. You installed an update that gave you version 2. You installed another update that gave you version 3. If you did no cleanup, your OS would now have three different versions of that component in it, and it would just the image would continue to grow in size. If you ran the start component cleanup, it would remove 3, but it would leave, or sorry, it would remove 2, but it would leave 1 and 3. Now with the reset base command, you can say go ahead and remove version 1, leaving it only with version 3. The good thing about that is it frees up the disk space. The bad thing is you can never uninstall those updates because the original components aren't present anymore. So that is an option. You can put that into your task sequence. You can use that as part of your image creation process, and it will take your image and shrink it down. After you run that command, you do need to reboot the system one more time, so make sure you put a reboot after that before you sysprep and capture. But it does shrink a few hundred meg off of a typical image size just by getting rid of all those old components as you've installed patches. So let's then talk a little bit more about WIMBoot. Like I said, it's a new way of deploying Windows. It's certainly not the default way. It's certainly not the recommended way. It's to solve a particular problem. How do we run Windows on a system that only has a 16 gig hard drive or even a 32 gig hard drive? Windows doesn't run very well on those systems today because the OS itself, when you apply it, can take up to 12 of those 16 gig. And if you're left with 4 gig of usable disk space when the system first boots up, as you apply updates and install software and put data files on the system, pretty soon you're out of disk space. So the idea with this is instead of applying the WIM, we just copy the WIM locally, create pointers into that WIM file, make it look like you're running a normal Windows installation. As a result of that, the amount of free disk space, instead of being maybe 4 to 6 gig on a system with 16 gig hard drives, instead is more like 10 to 12. So it turns a 16 gig system into something that's very usable. You still don't see a lot of these systems out on the open market, but as we get closer to the holidays and these 129 US dollar systems that are going to be coming out, these small tablets from the Chinese manufacturers, you'll start to see a lot more of this being used because really they need to do that in order to effectively run Windows on these smaller systems. We had to make a variety of other changes really to make Windows 8.1 run efficiently on a machine with the gig of RAM or less, but those are kind of secondary. Really the main focus here is how do we free up disk space? So when a machine is set up like this, we'll partition it, and we'll have a partition at the end of the disk to store the image, the WIM file for the OS, and then we'll have a normal Windows partition, which is the C drive, which will have all the pointers that go into that. It's probably easier to just look at one of these and see what it looks like. Let's see if I can get to one of my virtual machines here. So if we bring up a command prompt on this system, if it will cooperate. We have a system helps to select a disk. We have a system with 4 partitions. Really, it has 5, but it hides one from you, so let's just assume that it has 4 for the moment. And if we If we dig into what those partitions actually are, the system one is a normal UEFI boot partition. This is a UEFI virtual machine. Reserve partition also is standard UEFI stuff. The ones that are interesting really are the next two. The primary partition, which is your typical C drive, and the recovery partition, which is where the WIM is stored. If we look at the volumes, those correspond to the C drive, which is the OS disk, and this volume 3, which doesn't have a drive letter associated with it by default. So if we select volume 3, assign a drive letter to it, it now has drive letter E. If we look at what's on drive letter E, we have two folders, one called recovery and one called Windows images. Recovery contains a Windows RE recovery image, which is nothing special. It's not even there at the moment. So we have that, and then we have the Windows images folder. Windows images contains the install.wim. So that's an x64 install.wim. It's about 4.5 gig in size. So even with that there, if we look at the C drive, it has quite a bit of free disk space. Now, you have to keep in mind that this isn't a 16-gig drive. It's actually a 128-gig, so it has 125-gig free of a 128-gig system. Really, there's some rounding that's going on in there, but basically all that's being used is this 4-gig WIM file that's on the system. So the process of actually deploying that requires making some changes to a traditional deployment process, creating a different task sequence, where this different task sequence knows how to apply the WIM file. So first copy it locally and then run the DISM commands to apply it to the disk. It can still inject drivers, apply updates, install apps, and all that kind of stuff. That all happens. Well, some of it happens in Windows PE, some of it happens when you're in the new OS, but none of it touches that original install.wim file. It's read-only. It's just used for the pointers to originally get created on the disk. All the subsequent changes to the OS happen to the C drive. So we can kick that process off, which really only makes sense for bare metal deployments. And we can come back and check on that in a little bit. So it will partition the disk. It'll then copy the WIM file down locally, run the DISM command to make the links happen, and then the process is effectively done. So if we look at a system where this process has already been completed, we can see the same basic partition structure, although the GUI is hiding additional partitions as well, so you don't quite see all of them, but you see the two partitions of importance. We can see the operating system C drive, which has an attribute on it called WIMBoot. So we can see that this is a WIMBoot volume just from the tag that the disk management tool puts on it. The recovery partition then contains the actual OS. To the kind of the just looking at it from an end user perspective, you can't see anything different about this system. So if we bring up an Explorer window and browse through the C drive, it will look just like any typical Windows installation. If that will actually come up. It's thinking about it. Just a little sluggish. Yeah, take my word for it. It'll look just like any other Windows install. So you'll see C Windows, C Program Files, C Users, all of those folders will be in their normal places and just work. Now, to actually do that type of deployment using something like MDT requires some customization. And the blog post that I talked about before explains all the steps that are necessary to do that. That is kind of a messy process to go through because it involves a few different things. First, you need to have a Windows PE 5.1 boot image, but MDT doesn't know how to do that, so you have to tell how to do that. The easiest way is by just putting a script in place. So in the samples folder, there's a batch file, actually a VB script in this case, updateExit.vbs, which MDT automatically runs every time it generates a boot image. You probably never even knew it was there because you never had to worry about it. But this thing can be customized, so you can add some logic into it to say, if we're building a WIM file, let's go ahead and apply the 6 different updates from the Windows 8.1 update to the boot image by running the dism add package command, pointing to the file that's located in the current directory. Then run the cleanup image command, start component cleanup, reset base to shrink it down as much as we possibly can. And then we have a good boot image that's ready to go. So that's the first step. We need to get a boot image that has that support in it. The second step is a customized task sequence where we replace the normal install operating system step or apply OS step with a new step that runs a script that just lets dism do the work. So when we look at that task sequence, it's pretty much the same as a standard task sequence except for this one step, which runs a script called LTI apply WIM boot. That particular script handles all of the heavy lifting, and that's actually attached to the blog posting that is out there. So we can see that script on the E drive here, deployment share, scripts. LTI apply WIM boot. Basic logic. Figure out how big that volume needs to be to contain the image. We don't pre-create the volume because of peculiarities in MDT and Config Manager. The partitioning doesn't allow you to say create a partition of a fixed size at the end of the disk and then use everything in the middle that's left. So you had to do some weirdness. So the easiest way was to just go ahead and create a very big C drive and then shrink it by enough to hold the WIM file. So it has to calculate how much space. Then it can shrink the disk, which, amazingly enough, using the MDT scripts, you can do in one line a VB script. So one line to shrink the volume. Then it creates the new volume, creates a Windows Images folder on it, copies the install.wim into that folder, and once it gets past that, it will run a dism command to apply the image with a WIM boot switch, which basically just tells it, open up the WIM file and create links on the C drive for every single file that's in that WIM, making it look like Windows is actually installed on that C drive. Then creates the boot entries for it. It'll optionally copy over the recovery image, which also has to be a Windows PE 5.1 updated image, and we'll register that on the system. And after that point, it's a traditional OS deployment. So I've documented how to do that on my blog, blogs.technet.com/mniehaus, and probably in a week or so, I'll describe how to do the same thing with Config Manager as well. With Config Manager, you had to do a lot of the similar hoops. You need to get the Windows PE 5.1 image in place. You need to replace the apply OS step with a custom step. And really, the rest of the task sequence ends up being the same. So you can deploy these operating systems. You can deploy using WIM boot, using MDT and Config Manager. But still, it's not something I would recommend for broad deployments. It does require UEFI. It's only recommended for machines with 16 and 32 gig drives. It does require SSDs because there's a an I.O. penalty that you would have to pay for doing this, and only SSDs are fast enough to make this performant so that Windows actually runs reasonably well. And really, it's intended for the new devices that are coming out that have the CPU power to decompress these files on the fly, that have the SSD speed but don't have the appropriate size of SSD to otherwise run Windows. So it's kind of a first attempt for us at being more creative about how Windows gets deployed so that it uses a whole lot less disk space. We'll continue to enhance this as we move forward into the future to make this more transparent and easier to deploy. But for right now, you can play around with it in your labs and see how it works so that when you go out and you buy one of these cheap devices and you find that it comes like this, you'll be able to recreate something like that yourself. Talking about MDT 2013, this was the new release for Windows 8.1. So obviously it adds support for Windows 8.1 and Server 2012 R2. It also supports Config Manager 2012 R2 and requires the ADK for Windows 8.1. It drops support, though, for old stuff. So it no longer supports Windows XP or Windows Vista, no longer supports Config Manager 2007, no longer supports Config Manager 2012. If you're using any of those, you have to keep MDT 2012 Update 1 around to support those OSs and those versions of Config Manager. Only go to 2013 if you have all the other prerequisites in place. There aren't a lot of changes in MDT 2013 over 2012 Update 1. I posted a blog that basically went through every single script, every single bug filed in the MDT database and just listed. Here's everything that's changed. We've changed this script for this reason. We changed the console for this reason. Everything is documented in there. So you can read through it and see all the changes that were made, which all fit in one blog posting. So think of this more as kind of a maintenance release to MDT, very easy to install. You install it over the top of your MDT 2012 Update 1 install, and then upgrade your deployment chair in place, generate new boot images, and off you go. All your existing task sequences are fine. Everything else is preserved. Everything should just work. Now, of course, we would tell you to make sure you have a backup first, just in case anything breaks, but because of the nature of the changes, it's a fairly low-risk update to make. We were concerned for a while that Windows 8.1 update would require some changes to MDT and Config Manager. At the end of the day, didn't happen. So as a result, you can continue to use MDT 2013 and Config Manager 2012 or 2012 R2. To deploy Windows 8.1 even after the update's been installed. There are some blog postings on the MS Deployment blog and on the Config Manager blog that really just go into more details on that to say, it works fine. You can download the new ADK. We recommend that for USMT. We don't recommend using Windows PE 5.1. It's really only needed for WinBoot anyway, so it explains the same stuff that I've been talking about. Config Manager 2012 R2 fully supports Windows 8.1 and Server 2012 R2. It does require the ADK for Windows 8.1. Again, no changes needed for the 8.1 update. That's all described in the Config Manager team's blog. But you can still deploy Windows 8.1 using Config Manager 2012 SP1 as well. You just need to install Cumulative Update 3 and then build and import your own Windows PE boot image. So using Windows PE, not 6.3, Windows PE 5.0, import that into Config Manager 2012 and use that to do your Windows 8.1 deployments. You would continue to use Windows PE 4.0 to deploy earlier operating systems from the ADK for Windows 8. You could manage Windows 8.1 using Config Manager 2007. That is supported, but you can't deploy Windows 8 or Windows 8.1 using Config Manager 2007. Basically, it stops with Windows 7. So if you're one of the laggards that's still running Windows XP, you're at a point now where you're trying to figure out, how do I go from Windows XP to something that's supported? Hopefully, you're going to do that very quickly. And it becomes a debate. Do I want to go directly from XP to Windows 7, or do I want to go from Windows XP to Windows 8.1? Well, we made that a little more complicated because the ADK for Windows 8.1 includes a version of USMT that doesn't support capturing state for Windows XP. It also includes a utility called bootsec.exe, which is used to put a new style boot sector on machines to replace the one that was on Windows XP. So its only purpose in life is to run on an XP system to put a new boot sector in place. Well, guess what? The 8.1 version doesn't run on Windows XP. That is bizarre, but it can be worked around. You can just take the boot sect from an older ADK for Windows 8, which still works on Windows XP, and put it into your deployment process and use that instead. With MDT, that's not too hard. In the Config Manager case, they had to come out with a hotfix to deal with that, but it's all documented, not too difficult to deal with. So then to use the new version of USMT to restore the state to Windows 8.1, because the old versions don't support restoring to 8.1, using the old version to capture from Windows XP, fortunately, the store formats that are created by USMT are compatible between the two. So capture the state with the old version, restore it with the new version, everything works out okay. Then you just need to convince either MDT or Config Manager to use different versions of USMT to do that, which by default it won't do. So in the case of MDT, I posted a blog that describes how to do that, basically including a replacement for the ZTI user state script, along with some instructions on how to put both versions of USMT in the same deployment share. And then the Config Manager guy has documented how to do the same thing with Config Manager. The Config Manager case is actually a little easier because you can just put different USMT packages on the capture step versus the restore step. So it's not quite as involved as the MDT process, but at least in the MDT case, it's just copying a new script, copy in the old version of USMT, copy in a new bootsec.exe, or really an old bootsec.exe, and then you can do the deployment. So if you want to do XP to Windows 8.1 directly, you can. And there's not a whole lot to it. Let me bring up a Windows XP system, which makes me cringe every time I see it. Log back in. And in this case, I'm connected to an MDT 2013 deployment share. I've already run the lighttouch.bbs script. I can just choose a standard task sequence, like in this case, Windows 8.1 Enterprise x64. S14 is our internal name for the Windows 8.1 update. Short for Spring 14. We got tired of saying that all the time, but that was the update released in April. So basically, that's just saying it's already installed. So we'll choose the Windows 8.1 task sequence, which has no changes to it. It's a standard client task sequence. We can initiate the update process. We've got some data on the desktop if we wanted to come back and verify this at the end to make sure that it's migrated. But it will know, because of the replacement ZTI user state script and the bootsec.exe that's been overlaid, exactly what needs to be done to pull this off. If we look at the actual server, again, in our deployment share, we have a tools folder that contains the USMT files. So we've got two USMT folders here, USMT5 and USMTX. The USMT5 folder contains USMT 6.3. The USMTX folder contains USMT 5.0. Don't even ask me to explain why. It goes through that in the blog, but that's the two versions of USMT. So you don't need to touch the USMT5 one. That already will have the right version from the ADK from Windows 8.1. You just need to copy USMT5 from an ADK for Windows 8 install folder into the USMTX folder, and it will automatically find it and use it from there once you've dropped in the replacement ZTI user state script. I click in the right place. Which we can see here was updated a little more recently than the other files in the folder back in October, which is when we first had talked about doing this. So not hard to do that if you so choose. Hopefully most of you have already solved that particular problem and don't have Windows XP anymore, but if you do, go to Windows 8.1. It will make future moves even easier, and use this process to do it. Next then, in-place update or in-place upgrade. This is basically the simple deployment process we talked about to go from Windows 8 to Windows 8.1, letting setup do all the work. It preserves everything. In order to do that, we just need to run setup.exe/auto:upgrade. We would use the standard media to do that, no custom images. We can do that with Config Manager. We can do that with pretty much anything that can run an automated command line. You could do it with a startup script if you really wanted to. We've seen people kick it off with psexec. I mean, it's easy enough to do this just by running that command. It will take care of staging a Windows PE boot image on the machine, rebooting into PE, laying down the new image after cleaning up the old OS, merging everything back in the way it needs to be, and then we're off and running. If you're curious to see how that works on a large scale, that's actually how we deployed Windows 8.1 internally at Microsoft. Big surprise there. We had a very large Windows 8 deployment. We needed to move all of those machines to Windows 8.1, and we did that and documented the results. So we were monitoring that with Config Manager. We were able to detect the issues that were happening, analyze those issues, see what types of failures we were encountering, remediate those, and try again. The overall initial success rate was in the high 90s. I think it was like 97% success rate. The 3% of failures, kind of the random types of things, machines with not enough disk space, machines that ran out of power during the deployment process. There were some incompatible drivers. There were a few machines that were powered off during the deployment because someone put them in their bag and took them home with them. So a variety of issues like that. But out of those 3% failures, they got almost no help desk calls. Because in the case of the failures, it just rolled back to Windows 8. So the people generally didn't even know that there was a failure on the machine, unless they happened to be watching it while it happened. So very streamlined process, more successful than their previous deployment processes where they used more of a traditional wipe and load going from Windows 7 to Windows 8. They had a slightly smaller success rate on that deployment and a whole lot more help desk calls. So very successful. We've documented all of those results, and we're hoping to go through those similar processes as we get into future deployments and provide more case studies like that to explain, here's how it was done. Here's what the success is. Here's why you should consider that as something other than the traditional wipe and load. So the process of initiating that, I'll just do the quick way because we probably will run a little short on time. If I switch over to a Windows 8 system, all I need to do is from the standard media folder, setup.exe, auto:upgrade, initiate the process, and walk away. It will prepare the system, it'll reboot the system, it'll automate everything from that point forward. So if you were to do something like this from Config Manager or using a startup script or using some other mechanism, they would see exactly the same thing on the user's workstation. There are a few things here that we can still tweak, like the close box at the top right. Most of the time, IT people don't want to have their users cancel this, but they can. They can just click X. It'll ask them to confirm, do you really want to cancel? Yes, I would, and it will roll back then, and everything will be fine, but you'll then get the statistics back into Config Manager to show, hey, the user canceled these deployments, but otherwise, the rest of the process is completely without any user interaction and will run through the whole process to completion. So we'll let that run in the background, and we'll come back and check on that one later. Next up, servicing. When we're doing, helps if I click the right direction. When we're doing an update from, say, Windows 8 to Windows 8.1, we do this via servicing, which is just a normal process of installing an MSU into an operating system, where MSUs are basically the format of the updates that get applied to the operating system. So we released the Windows 8.1 update as a set of MSUs. There were actually six of them. I think we added one or two later, but basically there were six initial updates. They all needed to be injected into the OS or applied to a currently running OS. That created a new baseline, so Windows 8.1 now requires the Windows 8.1 update to get security updates from that point forward. So we had a 120-day grace period so that enterprises could get the Windows 8.1 update deployed. So we continued to provide security updates pre-update and post-update until August of this year. So now we're not releasing updates for pre-Windows 8.1 update anymore. We also posted new ISOs to the Volume License Service Center. So you don't really need to go through the process of manually updating your images. Just download the new ISO, drop it into your MDT or Config Manager, and build a new image because all the updates will already be installed and you won't have to go through the process of injecting them. These are the updates themselves. Basically, there was one servicing stack update, KB2919442, that was actually released a month earlier. It was released in March. That prepared the OS to receive the new updates. There was then the main update, 2919355, which was the big one, and a few others that contained some critical fixes that couldn't fit in the original update. So it's not that we created six of them just for the fun of it. There were technical reasons why it was broken apart into different pieces, but you can install all of those pieces basically in the order that they're listed there. So you would inject the 442, then the 355, then the other three, and there was one that was identified fairly late in the process, the last one, the 9977. There was a problem where if you were running a very particular WSUS configuration with SSL enabled, it would break the Windows Update Agent and it wouldn't be able to install updates anymore. So we had to come out with another fix to solve that problem, but most people weren't affected by that because most people don't enable SSL on their WSUS servers, and it was only a problem on older WSUS 3.2 systems. It wasn't a problem if you were running WSUS on server 2012 or above. So the process then of installing the update or injecting it, if you wanted to do it offline, you could certainly do that. You just need to mount the existing WIM and inject those fixes into it in the order that we were looking at. So if we have a folder that contains all the updates, both the x86, x64 versions, and the install.wim that we want to patch, I'm too lazy to type in all the commands necessary to do that. So I built a batch file, which just walks through the steps. Mount the WIM, inject the servicing stack update, which has to be done first, then inject all the other updates, and finally run the cleanup process to reset the image back down to its minimal size. So we should just be able to run that batch file and let it go through the whole process, and what did it say? The first one failed. Specified image in the specified WIM is already mounted for read-write access. You gotta love when that happens. We're not going to try to clean that one up because that takes way too long. Basically, I have the same WIM, same install.wim, mounted in some other folder, which I would need to find and unmount, but that takes too long. So that's the basic steps. We just need to run those commands and wait an hour because it really does take quite a while to inject these updates offline. And then we have a Windows 8.1 update, updated WIM. It's just as easy to go out and download the updated ISO from VLSC, though. Probably faster. I can probably go out and download the updated 4-gig ISO file faster than I can patch it with the new updated MSUs. So let's talk a little bit more about the Windows 8.1 update itself. There are a variety of changes in it. One is for Internet Explorer. We added a new Enterprise Mode IE capability to it, which is great. Everyone should try that out, both for Windows 8.1 as well as for Windows 7. So we also released an update for Windows 7 that provides the same Enterprise Mode IE capabilities on Windows 7. It's not available for Windows 8, but it is available for 7 and 8.1. We'll take a look at that a little bit more in a minute. We also enhanced the user experience a little bit. We added some buttons to the start screen. We added the start button back itself. We made some other tweaks to the behaviors to add task bars at the bottom and window title bars at the top of modern apps. So just trying to provide a better user experience for modern apps on non-touch devices. It's a start. It's still not perfect, and we're continuing to work on that for our next Windows release. But for right now, it's simple. It's easy for us to do. So those are the types of changes that we've made. We also added support for low cost and the latest hardware. That's where WimBoot comes in, by enabling Windows to be squished down to run on a 16-gig device, as well as to run on a machine that has a gig of RAM. We extended the mobile device management capabilities that were in Windows itself. I talked a little bit about those in my previous session yesterday, so if you listened to that, we got into some of the details around that. But that's basically what the Windows 8.1 update is, other than being a cumulative roll-up of every security and reliability fix that we had released for Windows 8.1 up to that point in time. So that's why it became a new servicing baseline. It was the enhanced features that we added, which are listed here, combined with all the cumulative security and reliability updates that we made at the same time. Basically, we had several thousand engineers working on all of these areas, as well as the security and reliability fixes, all of them bundled up and shipped as the Windows 8.1 update. So let's take a moment and look at Enterprise Mode IE. How many of you have been to a session on Enterprise Mode IE? All right, so this will be old news for you. That was yesterday or earlier today, but I know there was an Enterprise Mode IE session. So we'll quickly go over it here to show the basic concept. So we could have a website. If I could type localhost. Network's a little slow at the moment. Come on, you can do it. It's magic. I can type and watch it show up 30 seconds later. All right, so finally, it loads up my simple little travel page. But even though I'm running IE11, it's giving me an error message telling me that you need to update from IE8. Common problem in web pages, they assume that version numbers would continue to go up, which they did, but they also didn't do a proper numeric comparison, so they would check string values and say that is 11 greater than 8 as a string? Well, no, it isn't, because a 1 is less than an 8. So they would say, well, this is an out-of-date version of IE. Well, that's broken. So that was one problem. But the other problem is really just around some of the attributes that were used in this HTML, causing those other controls to end up in the top left corner instead of where they're supposed to be. So we had compatibility mode before, so we could easily say that we want this particular page to be in compatibility mode, which we have completely hidden in the current release so that it's hard to even find that. I don't even remember how to find that. So let me add that into the compatibility view. Refresh. All right, that made things a little better. Now we could say, let's put this page into enterprise mode, where we can see the icon change. And it's a very subtle difference between the two, but basically that resolves all of the change, all of the issues that we had with the website by making this page completely emulate IE8. So effectively, we have the complete IE8 engine running inside of IE11, and via policy, you can control which web pages end up on which engine. So by default, everything ends up in IE11, but you can specify via an XML file that you can push out via group policy where what you want to have go elsewhere. So in this case, I have an XML file just saying that anytime you go to yahoo.com, let's run that on IE8. Anytime you go to sports.yahoo.com, though, go ahead and exclude that and let it run in IE11. So we can go to yahoo.com. We again see the enterprise mode icon to let us know that we're running this in IE8. And it loads the page. If we go to sports.yahoo.com, we don't see the icon, so here we're running in IE11. So it kind of becomes a simple troubleshooting operation. If we go to a web page and we see some issues with it, we just toggle on enterprise mode. Let's maybe go to ESPN. Maybe we detect some issues there and we want to fix those, so we just come into Tools and say enable enterprise mode. So that's okay. You can instruct your users to do that, but what you would like to also know is who's doing that. So we can look at that and be able to see who has selected that and how often they've selected that. So one of the policies enables us to specify a URL that should be used every time the user toggles that on and off. So I have an active server page on this particular website, on this particular machine, that writes all of these manual requests into a text file. You could write it into a database, you could do whatever creative things you wanted with this, but in this case, I can see clearly that someone went in, me, and turned on enterprise mode for the travel site, and also turned it on for ESPN. So maybe those are sites we want to investigate and see if they have compatibility issues. If they do, then we can update the XML file to put in the entries for everyone. We've seen some enterprises go much more creative with this and just use the database directly, put these entries into the database, and then just put checkboxes next to them. So the IT admin would go in periodically and see, oh, ESPN's been checked by 27 people. I'll check the box. That will write an entry to the XML file, and now it will get pushed out via group policy to all the machines. But now if I came in here and toggled it off, Maybe that means I did some troubleshooting and it didn't really help. If we open that file again, it will just create another entry in there to say the same user turned it off. So really, you can keep a count. You can say this number of people turned it on, this number of people turned it off. That means that there are this number of people that still have it turned on. As a result, maybe that's a site we want to investigate. So it's not just about being able to set the policy. It's also about being able to collect the information to know who's using this. The only challenge with that is you do need to do some education so that they know that that option's available and that they know to try it. So there is a policy to turn that on and off so that you can see that enterprise mode option. But we would recommend that you have it on to enable your end users to enable that to get into IE8 when they need to. The bigger use probably is going to be internal applications, not necessarily web pages on the internet. Most people have updated the external pages to properly deal with IE11 by this point in time. But if you've got internal applications that still aren't working well with IE11, this is another option available for trying that out. We also changed some things in the start screen for Windows 8.1. We simplified the process of configuring the start screen layout. You can now run PowerShell commands to export the layout into an XML file, which you can then use as a group policy to force that layout onto people. You can also export it as a binary file and put that into your image to specify a default layout that should be used for all users when they first log in. There was a change in behavior, too, to make sure that the apps aren't pinned by default when they're installed. There is also a group policy that goes along with that to say anytime an app with this ID is installed, go ahead and pin it by default. The default of not pinning it can cause some problems, like if you deploy a project or something like that out to a machine and the user can't find it if it doesn't show up on the start screen. Well, you could put an app ID for project into the group policy to say automatically pin project anytime it's deployed. We also added the boot to desktop option so that when users first log in, they don't go to the start screen, they go directly to the desktop. That's good. We can change the behaviors of the start screen to show the apps view, which is the lower screen below the start screen by default. We can also change the sort order to put desktop applications first before the modern applications, and a variety of policies tied to that to allow you to control those. In the interest of time, let me skip over that demo. Talk a little bit about kiosks. We have the ability to do a single-purpose kiosk where we can run one app for one user through assigned access, which is a feature in Windows 8.1, which allows you to basically go into the PC settings, select the application that you want to run, select the user that should run it, and anytime that user logs in, it automatically launches that app and they can't do anything else. That's useful in some scenarios, but when you get into more robust kiosk scenarios, we also came out with a new SKU of Windows called Windows Embedded Industry. So there's Windows Embedded Industry Pro, Windows Embedded Industry Enterprise. They include capabilities that let you go as far as filtering out keystrokes and preventing the insertion of USB devices and suppressing dialog boxes and really trying to lock down the machine as much as possible. It also has write filters so that you can reboot the machine and cause all the changes to the machine to be discarded. So it's really about creating a more bulletproof kiosk that you could use in a public space, running Windows, running a browser, running an application, running whatever you want, but controlled through basically policy configuration. In the Windows Embedded Industry case, there's a tool called the Embedded Lockdown Manager. You run that to configure what you want to allow and then generate a PowerShell script from that. That PowerShell script can be run on any machine where you want to duplicate that configuration. In the case of assigned access, you just manually go into PC settings on each machine where you want to set this up, choose the user, choose the app, configure the machine for auto logon as that user, and off you go. So assigned access is all about simplicity. Windows embedded industry is all about control. Fortunately, if you have Windows Software Assurance, which is what gets you the enterprise SKU of Windows, you also get Windows Embedded Industry Enterprise. So you can choose machine by machine, which one do you want to deploy? So if you wanted to create some machines where you have more of these advanced lockdown scenarios, just use Windows Embedded Industry. On the other machines, which are more standard productivity machines, then you can run just the standard enterprise SKU. It's a little awkward to have to choose different SKUs based on the capabilities, so that's something we're looking to address in the next Windows release by trying to get it so that all of these capabilities are in the enterprise SKU so that we don't need to worry about that. But for right now, at least you can choose between the SKUs. There's no extra cost involved. We also published some quick guides and user's guides for Windows 8.1 to help users with getting started with Windows 8.1. We posted both PDF versions of those and the raw files for doing that, I think both in Word and InDesign format. So you can then customize those, maybe put your own logos on them, publish them for your own internal users. They're generally printed out as nice ring-bound guides that you could drop on the person's desk right after they've been upgraded to Windows 8.1 to explain to them how to use that. So take a look at those and try those out. We've also posted a variety of tutorial videos for enterprises to maybe send out links via email messages to instruct the users, here's how to try some things with Windows 8.1 to discover the particular capabilities that that were needed. Okay. That's pretty much what I wanted to go through. If there are any questions, given that we're already a few minutes over, we should probably just save those for up front afterwards. Thanks for attending. Hopefully that was useful. And I'll be around the rest of the week too, so track me down, look me up in the hallway if there are any other deployment questions, Windows 8.1 questions, or even maybe a few futures questions. Track me down. Thanks.